This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
my government will not condone violence acts to continue by either armed officers or civilians.
That's Gambian President Adama Barrow talking about deadly clashes between protesters and security forces over a sand mining dispute. Details coming up.
Also, the Egyptian army kills at least 32 extremists in two separate assaults in the northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula. And Cameroon launches a $23 million emergency humanitarian assistance plan for hundreds of thousands of its citizens.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar plan to continue to negotiate to restore peace and stability in the country. The two leaders met face-to-face last night for the first time in 2 years in the Ethiopian capital. A rebel official says the meeting centered on building confidence and trust among the warring parties. Manawa Peter Gotkuth is the spokesperson for Machar's SPLMIO. He said today that Ethiopian Prime Minister Ahmed, who chaired the meeting, told Kiir and Machar to work together to bring peace back to their country. Gotkuth told Waki Simon Wudu, who reports for VOA from Juba, that the mood was good during last night's meeting. Gatku says Kiir and Machar agreed to present Abiy new proposals that will be the basis of future talks on ending the newly five-year-old conflict. He says they agreed that talks between the various warring parties should resume in Addis under the auspices of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. Gatku says Machar suggested mediators consider a model used during previous talks that led to the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which ended the war between the Sudanese and the SPLA rebels in 2015.
In The Gambia, the government of President Adama Barrow says it is setting up a commission of inquiry to investigate the shooting incident that left two environmentalists dead and a dozen others critically injured. In a statement to the nation Tuesday, the president reassured Gambians that justice will be done in the Faraba Banta sand mining incident. The situation in Faraba village remains unsettled. The Gambia Press Union reported that a journalist was badly beaten during protests over the sand mining, and the Economic Community of West African Forces were deployed to help maintain peace. VOA's Panderambai reports.
The Inspector General of Police says five members of the police intervention unit, including two field commanders, have been arrested over the weekend. They have been suspended pending the outcome of the government probe. The violence followed a long-standing dispute between the villagers of Faraba and the Julake Engineering and Construction Company, which they accused of environmental exploitation. In his address to the nation, Barrow described the incident as worrisome.
Fellow Gambians, I learn with deep regret about the clashes between some members of the Police Intervention Unit, PIU, and some members of the community of Faraba in Kombo East. We are a mourning nation today, and my sincere condolences go to the families of Bakary Kujabi and Ismail Aba for their loss, and I pray that Allah grant them solace.
The president paid a courtesy call on hospitalized victims Tuesday and assured the nation that his government will get to the bottom of the incident.
I have instructed for a full investigation into the matter to determine the action needed to address the situation and prevent a reoccurrence in any part of the country. Fellow Gambians, I have been updated that three of the armed PIU officers involved in the incident at Faraba are currently in police custody, and one of them, who was armed and got injured during the incident, is also admitted to hospital.
Barrow has called for restraint among the security forces against peaceful protesters. But environmentalists have accused his administration of not being environmental friendly. For example, the government issued a sand mining license to Juleke, despite public outcry over the company's alleged environmental destruction. And fishing licenses were issued to a Chinese company, Golden Lead, which has been linked to alleged environmental pollution.
Our security forces are mandated to protect lives and property. Under no circumstances should they use live bullets against unarmed and defenseless citizens. And all those found wanting will be dealt with according to the laws of the land.
Barrow says all citizens should enjoy their constitutional rights to freedom of expression and association. He also says the right to peaceful protest is guaranteed by the Constitution. But he warns against violent demonstration.
My government will not condone violence acts to continue by either armed officers or civilians. The peace, security, and stability of the country are fundamental for all citizens to enjoy their basic human rights and allow us to pursue our agenda for social, economic, and political reforms.
Vice President Fatoumata Diallo Tambadjang says Gambians must change their perception toward democracy to achieve socio-economic and political reforms.
There is a misconception of democracy. Now you see people doing everything, taking the law in their own hands. That's not democracy. Democracy is the respect for the rule of law, respect for the human rights. Where your right stops, that's where the other person's right begins.
Both the police command and the borough leadership have denied giving orders to shoot the environmentalists. But human rights activist Pa Sambajou says the government should take full responsibility for the deaths.
It is the responsibility of the Inspector General of Police to make sure that his forces, when they are out to stop a protest or any type, they are going there and there are clear rules of engagement. If they deviate from that, then the responsibility lies with the commanders. And this goes, as far as I'm concerned, it's not only the IGP, but I lay this blame quietly on President Barrow and his government, period.
Banjul remains tense. Human rights activists are planning a major demonstration over the weekend to condemn what they call police brutality and Barrow's lack of leadership direction in steering the affairs of the nation. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirimbay reporting.
France clinched a spot in the World Cup's knockout round with a tough 1-0 victory over Peru today, thanks to a rising star with African heritage. 19-year-old Kylian Mbappe scored late in the first half for the only score that France needed to improve to 2-0 in Group C. That made him the youngest French player to score at the World Cup. Born in Paris, his father is from Cameroon and his mother is from Algeria. Australia was hurt by video replay in its first round match today. The Aussies benefited from the replay system for a 1-1 tie with Denmark. Australia earlier lost 2-1 to France, whose first goal came on a penalty called after a video replay, a system being used at the World Cup for the first time. Denmark went ahead 7 minutes into today's match as Tottenham's Christian Eriksen scored. 30 minutes later, the replay system spotted a handball by Denmark's Yusuf Poulsen. Mile Jedinak then converted the penalty kick to the score. In the day's final match, Argentina is facing Croatia. All of the African teams have today off. Nigeria will be in action tomorrow against Iceland. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wahib, 14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar plan to continue to negotiate to restore peace and stability in the country. The Egyptian army has killed at least 32 extremists in two separate assaults in the northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula, and a commission of inquiry is being set in the Gambia to investigate the death of two environmentalists. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
K Cameroon has launched a $23 million emergency humanitarian assistance plan for hundreds of thousands of its citizens. The government says they live in precarious and life-threatening conditions in Cameroon and Nigeria due to the war with armed separatists fighting for the independence of the country's English-speaking area from the French-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé that all Cameroonians have been called upon to contribute to the fund.
Cameroon's Prime Minister Philemon Yang says the $23 million plan was ordered by President Paul Biya after more than 100 Cameroonians have been killed, 84 soldiers and police murdered, and hundreds of thousands of its citizens now live in precarious and life-threatening conditions. Prime Minister Yang says the war has internally displaced 74,000 people who are facing famine alongside disastrous health conditions, and that 21,000 others have fled to Nigeria and should be brought back home.
Our emergency humanitarian assistance plan aims at providing emergency humanitarian assistance to affected people, ensuring the socioeconomic reintegration of the affected populations, reconstructing destroyed infrastructure, housing, food and basic needs, healthcare, education. This action will include assistance and visits to show compassion to Cameroonian refugees in Nigeria.
The Prime Minister said people living outside of Cameroon instigate armed youths under the influence of drugs to kill, kidnap and rape, adding that many teenagers have been recruited as child soldiers. He said famine was looming in the English-speaking areas since most farms and cattle ranches have been abandoned and most businesses closed. He said he was counting on government resources and contributions from Cameroonians and the international community to fund the emergency humanitarian assistance plan. Reactions have been varied. Many people say it is a good initiative to bring back thousands who have fled and reconstruct their destroyed towns and villages. But Reverend Father Apollinarius Nkeng of the Catholic Church, who has been providing food aid to displaced populations and calling for an end to the violence, says the government should first of all call for a ceasefire and dialogue with the armed separatists.
The option and the way out is proper and organized dialogue. But I think it should not be done in the manner politicians are talking about it. You cannot have unity and peace without justice.
Schools have been closed in the English-speaking northwest and southwest areas of Cameroon since November 2016, when lawyers and teachers called for a strike to stop what they believe is the overuse of the French language. Separatists took over and were asking for the independence of the English-speaking from the French-speaking regions. Cameroon government reacted with a crackdown, and several dozen leaders of the strike were arrested. Last week, the international human rights group Amnesty International criticized the Cameroon government for using unnecessary and excessive force, which frequently put civilians in a web of the violence and desperate conditions. Moki Edwin Kinziga for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Egyptian army says it has killed at least 32 extremists in two separate assaults in the northeastern part of the Sinai Peninsula. The statement was on a Facebook page updating the army's efforts against Islamic militants in what's called Operation Sinai. The army says troops dismantled 15 bombs planted along roadsides and arrested nearly 1,100 militants of various nationalities along the western frontier. The military-backed government has been fighting armed Islamic radicals since 2013, when Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi was ousted in a coup.
He's Initiative, a civic organization, has been researching public opinion as Zimbabwe prepares for the July 30th election. The group hopes real-time tracking of issues that matter to ordinary Zimbabweans will help voters shape developments in their communities. From Harare, reporter Kutsai Zvinavashi reports.
The Citizens' Voice Index tracks public opinion constantly using mobile phones. Sam Farai Monro is the creative director and co-founder of the Magamba Network, the non-profit group behind the index.
It's based on the realization we're going through quite historic times with the shifting political landscape. We had the coup last year. We've got elections coming up.
The daily phone surveys ask citizens a variety of questions, including what they consider the most important issue in Zimbabwe and whether people plan to vote in the July 30 polls.
Some of the key nuggets that have come out is that citizens are optimistic about their ability to shape the new Zimbabwe. 68% of survey respondents believe they can influence key issues facing Zimbabwe. Over 50% of all respondents stated that voting was the best way to make your voice heard.
The survey also found that more than 90% of the respondents are registered to vote and look forward to the election. 48% of the survey respondents say they think the economic situation is the most critical issue facing the country. The importance of free and fair elections ranked second at 23%. The vote will be the first in the country's modern history without Robert Mugabe. The army ousted the former leader last year after 37 years at the head of the government. His replacement, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is the ruling ZANU-PF party candidate for president and faces more than 20 opposition contenders. The research has been running for the past 3 months, collecting 1,200 completed surveys a month across Zimbabwe. Monroe says the survey outcome will be available to anyone on the website, magambanetwork.com. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Forces loyal to Libyan commander Khalifa Haftar have recaptured two oil ports that rival troops seized last week. Haftar's Libyan National Army today said it has control of the ports of Ras Lanuf and Es Sider. However, some new reports said forces led by Ibrahim Jatran were counterattacking at Ras Lanuf. Jatran's military controlled the ports for several years until Haftar's LNA captured them in 2016. The port shut down last week when Jatran's forces attacked, cutting national oil output by about a third. Libya has been divided among warring factions since the fall of longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. The battle for Libya's oil ports comes as the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries negotiates to increase output in the face of growing demand. Saudi Arabia wants to raise OPEC output by about 1 million barrels a day.
The Nigerian government says it will shut the land border with one of its neighbors to prevent smuggling of foreign rice into the country. The government did not mention any specific country, though most of the foreign rice is smuggled through Benin. Aldu Ogbe, the Minister of Agriculture and Rural Development, says shutting the border will encourage local production and sustain the country's economy. Over the past 2 years, he says the government reduced rice imports by 95% and increased the number of rice farmers from 5 million to 30 million. Austin Zwaze is a lecturer in political economy at Pan-Atlantic University in Lagos. He told reporter Mike Mbonye that smuggling of rice into Nigeria can be stopped if there is enough production to satisfy local consumption.
In the short term, it is in the interest of Nigerians. But the point I'm making is, if you shut down the borders, there is no arrangement made to improve domestic production, to determine whether domestic production can satisfy rice being the major staple food in Nigeria before shutting down the borders.
The administration of former President Goodluck Jonathan, in collaboration with the African Development Bank, launched a massive rice production program in some states. Do you have an update on that project?
You know, when that project took off by the former Minister of Agriculture, Adesina, farmers were asked to register. And about 10 million people registered as farmers. Even a friend of mine, he's a farmer now, but he works with Shell and all that. And what farm is he doing? They get seedlings to plant and give to another person to plant. And the person plants, harvests, and he buys back from the grower. There's a grower, there's a harvester, or whatever they call them. And then eventually the government buys from them. It's a whole long-term thing, and it adds to the cost of rice production. There is no direct investment. The only way is for them to have a consolidated kind of thing so that the commercial venture, they're all subsistence level. So they can't meet up with this because it's subsistence level. So if there's no sufficient arrangement made for this thing.
Some Nigerians say locally produced rice are not well packaged and prefer imported ones. What should be done to improve the quality?
Funny enough, Nigerian grown rice, produced rice, is malnutritious because it doesn't go through the kind of parboiling and all this thing that, you know, the foreign rice go through. So Nigerian grown rice or produced rice is more nutritious. It's more healthy to eat. I prefer it to foreign rice. But the point about packaging and all that, how do you package it? Destoning. So the destoning is a major thing. If you eat locally produced rice, there's a chance, a probability that you may chew sand. That's the only difference. So if they can get some destoning machine, which they do right now, so anybody telling you that foreign rice is better packaged and all that, is it not the same sack? The one produced in Abuja State by the government is better packaged. Some people are also packaging in different smaller sizes and all that. But the point is that is the destoning that is the major challenge that they have.
Do you think shutting the border will prevent rice smuggling?
Well, it's about demand and supply. If the demand, that's the point I made earlier, if the local production can satisfy the local demand, fine, smuggling, there'll be no need, no incentive to smuggle. Give yourself some years. Say, okay, 5 years before. Now, the closing of the border is okay. But the gap, they should have given gap, say, in the next 5 years to give the manufacturers, producers of rice, enough time to produce. Within then, they'll begin to. As they produce more, the demand for imported rice will be less until gradually it will be phased out.
That was Austin Nwazi, lecturer in political economy at the Pan Atlantic University, Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
40 greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America. Stand up!